Hello, Gary Williams. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Mitzi.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Hello, Mitzi. Cool. Well, welcome. Thanks for being first victim, pal, to this podcast. For those who kind of don't know, me and Gary are mates. We've fished for, I don't know, how long is it? About 6 years or so now.
Oh, far too long.
Far too long.
I'm only
far
kidding.
Too long.
Yeah, it's about and, 6 years.
Yeah, about 6 years, isn't it? So we have a few sessions on local rivers and still waters and whatnot. We'll have a chance to chat about them as well a little bit later. Again, for those who don't know, Gary's got a YouTube channel called Gary Williams and Mitzi, and I will put a little link in the description. So, yeah, that's the kind of intros, and that's Mitzi there, who's the star of the show.
Yes.
She's got some schmackos, has she? Is that the crack? Yeah, schmackos.
Oh, yeah, do a bit of advertising. Schmackos are great.
Yeah, sponsored. She's sponsored by schmackos.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
Probably get banned for that, will we? Might get a lot of dog food free.
We'd be like, chucking them in the river. It's great for baits.
So, mate, I know it's quite funny because I do know some of your past and the kind of fishing that you've done and whatnot. But for those who don't know, tell us about, like, where you started out your fishing, how old you were, where were you? Oh. I know you were brought up in sort of Manchester way.
Yeah, I was brought up in Manchester, in Stretford, like on the borders of Old Trafford, not far from the Manchester United's ground. But as growing up, the closest thing to us, I mean, we didn't know anything else, was the Bridgewater Canal, which is, it was only like a stone's throw away. But I think back in them days, Mark, it was like, oh, you know, your parents could chuck you out when you were a little wee eyed to a grasshopper sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you were up the canal sort of thing, even at the, you know, like you can barely remember it, but
yeah.
I think what my dad used to do is he used to send my oldest brother out and say, yeah, take him down the canal for a bit, go fishing because I'm a twin, so there's two of us.
Yeah, I didn't realise that until you mentioned that the other day.
Oh, yeah, no, two of us. So I think my mum sort of like, because I've got five other brothers and sisters. And I think it was a little bit too much for my mum at the time, and I think I might have been a bit hyper. So
Not you.
So I think they used to get my eldest brother to take me up to the canal. And back in them days, you know, it was whatever gear you could get your hands on. So it was like little 6 foot, like Winfield rods and things like that, and little canal bobbers or quill floats and stuff. And I remember the first fish. I bet I was only around about, I don't know, it was anything between the age of around about, I don't know, 5, 6 or something like that. But
that's when you caught your first fish.
Yeah, and it was a little skimmer bream. It was tiny, and I thought that set me up, because after that it seems to be everything else that I sort of caught was a stickleback.
You still do.
And it was a good few years until actually, you know, because everybody goes on about the canal being full of gudgeon, but I remember the first day I caught a gudgeon on, and I must have been at least about 9 or 10 or something like that. And I was with my mate Callum Young, we were on the gasworks, and I caught a gudgeon, and he was like, whoa, look at that, it was a gudgeon. It was quite interesting because from quite a young age, my dad will take us out, but what he used to do is I think my mum used to say, take him out on a Sunday, you know, like to get us out of the house, from under the feet, because she'd be doing the cooking and things like that. And my dad has always take us to the same canal bridge, right? And he'd take us to the canal bridge just in case it rained, so we could go underneath it.
Go underneath it, yeah, brilliant. Because he didn't have brollies.
Yeah, so. And then he'd go in the pub, right?
Yeah.
And I'd back in like that on a Sunday, and then several hours later, well, usually when it was going dark or, you know, like it was nearly tea time, then he'd come and pick us up, and he'd be like,
brilliant.
Are you sure you tell your mum that you I've been fishing with you?
And he'd been in pub all afternoon.
Yeah, been in pub all afternoon. But that was brilliant. Roughly it,
Yeah. And what, because I've never fished the Bridgewater, but it's quite a big canal, isn't it? Quite a deep, you know, compared with our local canal. We live nearby the Leeds Liverpool, don't we?
It's a bit of an eye-opener. I mean, when I come from Manchester to Liverpool, which must have been, I don't know, might have been 15, 16, 17 years ago, I'd fished the Leeds Liverpool, but round the what's the name, what they call the Botany Bay area, and a lot of
Chorley Bay, isn't it?
A lot of lure fishing, and round there, I thought it was quite shallow because your average depths around there tend to be like 4 or 5 foot or something like that.
Yeah, that's it.
Bridgewater Canal in Trafford Park, where we used to do all our fishing, it was ridiculous. I think the shallowest swims were like 5 or 6 foot deep, and the average depth was like 8, 9, 10 foot deep in certain areas. And then,
what about width? What how does it compare width-wise?
Absolutely. Which wider? Twice the width of the Leeds-Liverpool Canal down most stretches. And it was very industrial, very industrial.
Yeah.
A lot of concrete, a lot of jetties where barges would park up for all the industrial agents, bringing coal barges in and things like that, you know, to keep Trafford Park running. But,
totally different
very canal.
Good. Yeah. So, and what's your sort of happiest memories of fishing in the early days then? Have you got any standout moments? They're quite clean.
it was very crazy because, we used to watch, there's a lot of matches were all fished around that area. So we were all big matches with all the big names like Benny Ashurst, Kevin Ashurst, and everybody.
Legends.
Oh, they come from, see, a lot of those would have been like fishing round Lee area and places like that. It was a massive match scene, so very competitive. That was our entertainment, to go watch them. But most of our fishing was like, I think it's the same now, it's when you're young lads and you're growing up, and you're growing up with a lot of bunch of other lads and all the rest of it. You want to go pike fishing and things like that, or catch the biggest perch or carp and things like that. And being in Trafford Park, even though it's very industrial, it's very, very wild. You know what I mean? It's left to its own devices. So you'd get a lot of seriously big fish, and a lot of them. So back in those days, it was like, we were little ruffians. You know, we'd be climbing over walls at Kellogg's, getting into places like GEC and stuff like that. out of limits places for fishing, just to fish out of limits places, and it paid off most of the time. No, like,
I did water, did some of the stretches warm water came in, or was it some I don't know.
It was very unusual because around the Manchester United stretch, which is called the Pomona arm, that was known as craft edible oils, and that used to run to about 11 or 12 foot deep. Very hot, very, very hot water, but the smell was very distinctive. It was like they used to make like oils that would go through butters and margarines, I would imagine, on cooking oils and things like that. And all that byproduct, the byproduct of the production would be hot water. Yeah. So all that hot water had to go somewhere. So it just used to come through these giant pipes, which were under the towpath. And I would say the pipes were like 4 foot diameter, and you're blasting hot water out continuously all the time.
Into the canal.
And you
can fish all year round.
They were black with fish on the surface. There was everything, carp, bream, tench, you name it. And then the other stretch, which was Kellogg's, they used to have like the old basins where the canal barges would come in. Again, with the back in the old days, it would have been the coal, all the corn and things like that. Again, the treatment there was where they washed the corn. So all the corn dust and hot water was all mixed. It come in.
Again, fish food.
It was black with fish. So fish we were food, a little bit spoiled, let's
say.
And then lots of bream and shoals of fish brings predators. So it wouldn't be unusual if you went somewhere like Kellogg's Basin back in the 1980s. And there'd be like, I don't know, on the surface, underneath the bridge, there used to be like a plastic pipe with chains on it to stop any surface scum coming into the basin. So it was sort of like, it'd be lying there, but it was perfect cover underneath like a little bridge that went over. It's like a footbridge. And underneath, it wouldn't be unusual to be like half a dozen to a dozen pike, and we're talking double figures into 20 pounders, all lined up, all licking the lips, looking at these green like.
Brilliant.
But yeah, it was
fantastic.
Great.
Good. Cracking place. Have you been back? Have you been back years later or not?
I took a little bit of a detour, maybe. I don't know. It was quite a while ago, actually, and it's completely changed Trafford Park in that area. Yeah, I went back around about, I'd say about 8 or 9 years ago, I had a little bit of a fish around, and the Gaswork stretch is one of the stretches we used to enjoy fishing, but now it's like a fancy marina with all these like yuppie flats around it and barges all parked up in the marina. And then went up to Kellogg's, there was no hot water on. So, and on the opposite side to Kellogg's was this giant factory where it was sort of like dark and gloomy and used to throw lovely shadows over with spotted trees all the way along it. And all the trees are gone. All the warehouses are gone, and now it's a business park, and it's like a fancy path. So those days are gone, unfortunately. Now
it's a shame, isn't it? Really, I know that canals. We fished a few canals locally, haven't we? And they're quite surprising, aren't they? What we've been discovering in them. Really, it makes you think, because the anglers just don't seem to fish them anymore. They used to.
It's to benefit of us. It's great. And I think even if you're new to an area, one of the great things I use, not just for canals, but for rivers and things like that, is Google Maps. Is amazing. I mean, if you get it wrong, it's not like the end of the world. And the thing is you can carry mobile phones around with you, and you can throw a little map up like that. And even if you don't know the area, and you can drive down, find a... Usually, we discussed this the other day. It was like, usually, if there's a towpath and there's a little bridge going over it, you can guarantee there will be access somewhere along that. Fair enough, you might have to park your car, you know, somewhere safe and sensible, you know, and safe. But you can guarantee there's usually a good towpath, there'll be good access, and we go on and there's nobody there. And the amazing thing is these fish back in the old days, when we used to fish through the 1980s, 1990s, before commercials, everywhere was packed with anglers. Now you can go on those same canals today, there's nobody there, but there's more fish now, which is unbelievable. There's a lot
and
more
bigger fish, and certainly
bigger fish, a lot much bigger. And if nobody's actually read it, I found this book online, Mark.
Have you?
Yeah.
Shameless plug. I haven't paid him to do this.
If you haven't read it, read it. This will get you back on the canal. I'll put it down.
Put it away. Like Mitzi chew it up.
No,
I didn't bring the subject up about that.
No, can I talk about the book?
Well, Gary's in it as well. There's a picture of Gary.
Not that book. I don't want to talk about that book. I want to talk about another book.
You do.
Di Gribble, who's friends of our, sort of like, you know, we know him through social media. And
very good specimen angler. Specimen angler of the year.
Di was brought a book out called Beyond Dreams, and it wasn't cheap. And I asked Di personally, could you sign it for us? Put a beautiful message in it. And I've come home from work one day, and Mitzi Moo had ate the whole book. And it took me...
Well, she's got good taste.
She's got good taste. So anyway, I actually dug the book out, and I sort of like located it on the living room floor, took photographs of it, and I put a post on social media basically saying, Mitzi really enjoyed the book very much, especially the bit where Di had signed it. And Di replied, he went, oh dear. And it was like, these things happen.
They do. And they're limited edition books, these, aren't they?
It was one of the first runs of the book as well. So it's happened.
Mitzi. So we should say that Mitzi's one of the stars of your YouTube channel. Tell us a bit about your YouTube channel. What sort of things do you do on there, for those who don't know?
It was a bit strange, actually. There was never going to be ever a YouTube channel. Absolutely. And unfortunately, my dad died. It was getting on like six years ago now. And basically, I wasn't handling things too well. And I needed something to occupy my mind at the time. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if my dad could have actually seen a lot of the fishing that we've done? Because before then, you know, or before the mobile phone sort of like come along, I was quite lazy with taking photographs. So I'd take photographs, but not as often as I should. And I thought, well, it's a digital world, isn't it? So the channel was basically brought about, basically. So I've got a record to go back years ahead. And then after I made a lot of mistakes on the channel, actually, when you're making the films, by not getting the audio right or the colour grade.
It's very difficult.
No, it's very complicated.
Isn't it?
And it's so easy, because if you go into YouTube or anything like that they'll say, well, you can make a film at so many minutes long, and that's all you really need to be doing to get really good sort of like views. And I thought to myself, well, but isn't really giving a true sense of the whole day, because I want it like a diary. So I do cut a lot out, but it's not unusual for some of my films to be half an hour, 40 minutes to an hour long. But they are true representations, and I have a little bit of fun with it as well along the lines. And I loved the creation of the film, the soundtracks. Not so good at storytelling. I am, but they're a bit X-rated.
I was listening to one of yours today, just getting a bit of research, and I thought,
God. But and it's not for any other reason than basically having a bit of fun whilst you're out fishing. And giving you something to do when you get back, which is the filmmaking. And I love the filmmaking; it's great.
Yeah, and how have you found it? Has it been positive? I've started one, as you know, and I found it hard, and I've been surprised at a few things. You know, there's can be quite a lot of negativity online, which actually almost made me stop. You know,
when I first started, I'd be plugging it continuously on social media sites. Now, strangely, it's a lot of the social media sites, and we're talking about gentlemen of the same age as ourselves, or from the WhatsApp, and there's still quite a lot of people out there who seem to be a little bit angry with the world and seem to want to scream and shout or criticise anything that anybody does. So I had a little bit of a backlash on that side of it. So I decided that I wasn't going to plug it on social media. The only time it's ever going to get mentioned is through my personal pages. And detriment to me, fair enough, you don't get as many subscribers that way or anything like that. But it makes you feel great, because the majority of people who watch my film are my friends. So the fact that people find some of the filming... Hello, little one. Hello, thank you.
Oh, no, look at your face. How much you've been licking.
Arse. The thing is, you never know where the films are going to go on the day. So if I went somewhere local, and you don't know what's going to happen on the day, and you could think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, I'm going to have a go at catching some dace. And then all of a sudden a few chub turn up some trout or something, and then it's like, oh, my God, and the chaos sort of comes along. And sometimes you put a plan together, which is great, and the plan works. And you can go back using what you've learned and taking it back, and things that don't work, and put them in the films. Yeah. So it helps other people. And one of the other things why I did it to a point was I've always, from a very young age, had problems with my anxiety. And getting onto the bank sometimes can be a very difficult thing. And this is like a personal battle for me. The fact that I can actually go on the banks, film it, and not be scared of what anybody thinks about me. I really don't care.
Good for you.
And then actually create the film, put it out. And if it gets other people who are anxious, who think, oh, I fancy visiting Worley Abbey, but how do I get there? What do I need? And what can I expect to catch? And it's all there for them. You know what I mean? It's like, enjoy yourself. That's really We're here to share. That's it. That's it.
Yeah, that's good, and you do a good job of that for sure. It's not easy sometimes, is it? You know, I know that anxiety is an awful thing, and it's a struggle for a lot of people. So getting out and about.
Oh yeah.
And I think a lot of the upside, I think, is when you do get some really nice comments, and I know you do, and I know I've seen people come up to you regularly when we've been fishing, chatting away, and chatting to Mitzi. They recognise you on the bank and that. So that's a real positive thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It gives you a real lift.
It's great. I had one a few weeks ago, and I just went took Mitzi for a walk. I must have got 100 yards from my house, and somebody popped his head out of his window of his flat. And he said, I watch all your films and all the rest of it. And he says, I can't get out fishing much anymore because I have COPD. Watching your films is actually getting me to try and go out for a few hours, but I haven't been in 10 or 15 years, but I'm watching your films. And if he actually gets out and does a little bit of fishing, just because he's watched my film, even through a really serious health issue that he's got.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You know what I mean? That's what it's all about. You know what I mean?
It is. Yeah. Great. Brilliant. So last 12 months then, well, I know you've fished in different areas, different venues. What are some of the places you've fished? I know some of them you may be confidential, but...
Well, there's non-confidential. No? Not at the moment.
Any high points for the...
The thing with my fishing for when I was a lot younger, it was always pike.
Oh, really?
And then it was after that, you go through a phase and it's carp. You know where people try and get bigger fish? And for the last 12 months, I've been letting things sort of taper down slowly to the point, because what we were doing was... a lot of float fishing, or whether it was still waters, canals, we've done a little bit on, and also reservoirs. And I've been mixing it up, and I've been bringing back over the last couple of years a lot of my feeder fishing now. I don't go fishing to sort of like go fishing, I go to feed fish. And thing that I sort of like, seem to have discovered is I sort of got the knack of being able to present baits in the correct way for certain fish, mainly bream.
And
I've had a lot of success with the bream nets and really silly weights, river weights well over the 100-pound mark, going towards 200-pound marks on some bush. Then obviously on a lot of the big reservoirs and stuff, doing similar sort of weights. The thing I've been sort of like want to get into, and I've got my eye on for the next 12 months, is still to do what I'm doing, but I sort of feel like I've shied away from certain waters because of my anxiety. I take the easy approach, which is easier to go here or easier to go there, and I've got my eye on some double figure bream, but I won't be happy with one or two's great, right? But I want to see if I can get a dozen and maybe a little bit more, because I'll be honest, I've shied away from those really big
venues.
Open specimen waters, not because I'm scared of failing or not watching, because I'm quite confident along that lines that I think I'll be okay. But it was more along the lines of am I going to be safe at this venue, or is my van going to be safe at this venue?
Just silly little.
And it's one of those that you can't control everything in life. You just got to throw both feet in and get on with it.
But the fishing, you've
seen what's been going on. We've been doing a lot of river bream fishing, I enjoy that, but you sort of like... you sort of get limited to similar stamp fish, or you'll get the odd fish that's 7 pound or something like that.
Good bream, isn't it? For
but these are like virgin fish, you know what I mean?
And
we fish some really unusual sort of river swims, which are, you know, like very, I wouldn't say technical, they're just a little bit hard to get your feeder in, you know what I mean, like casting underneath trees and things like that, and losing a lot of feeders in the, well, I don't, but Danny did, Danny, if you're not watching, right, we could sell feeders to people who lose them.
Yeah, you need a little submarine to scrape the bottom of feeders.
Yeah, Danny, have some more. He's like, and he sticks them
Bless
in.
Him.
Yeah, he sticks them in.
You'll have to get Danny on. Danny, we fish with Danny. Danny's got a very successful channel.
Oh, Danny's, and, Danny's
he's,
a superstar.
Yeah, a bit of a legend at doing his stuff. I watch him and it's like, I don't know how the heck he records stuff and... I find it really difficult. I find it so difficult with all the cameras and the audio and stuff like that. It's all a big learning curve, I don't like that term, but it is, isn't it?
But we can go back to what we were discussing with the WhatsApp and the YouTube. I mean, in the early days when I first started, I was going out and buying all the inappropriate equipment. Like, you'd see what's on YouTube, what somebody else has suggested that you use. I mean, quite an expensive piece of kit. And then when you actually take that piece of kit onto the bank and then you go to use it and it only has a battery life of around about 20 minutes and you go, this doesn't work with how anglers need to use this equipment. And then the other thing with GoPro footage, which people don't take into consideration, the best frame rate to use for any film is 60 frames per second.
Okay.
30 frames per second doesn't see, it sort of works. Half the size, the files are half the size, so everything's smaller. But when and obviously when you're rendering, they only take half the time. But 60 frames is the best thing. But the file sizes are massive, and if you haven't got enough operating system or a fast enough processor in any of your equipment to actually make these films. Oh, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
I had to do the same. When I started, I got I was looking around for editing software and I ended up having to buy a new computer.
Yeah.
Because my old one, which was, I don't know how old it was, maybe 8 years old, it just ground to a halt doing the editing stuff. It's difficult.
The software is very powerful. I've got the editing down to a T now, and obviously you've got to be able to link all that pieces of equipment together, microphones. Yeah. I've gone out with footage on a day and you go, oh my God, I don't believe we've done that. And you have long cables to your microphone and it can get slightly damaged and you wouldn't know. Yeah. And then a little bit of drizzle comes. And then what happens is you get static building up where you plug the microphones in.
Oh, God.
And then what happens is you get back in the audience, you can hear it all the way through the film.
Oh,
and
you're
like 8 hours, 10 hours of footage going, making a crackly noise all the way through.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, and the leads aren't expensive anyway. They might be at £10 or something like that. And you basically you go, all right, unplug it, throw it away, put another one, and hey, presto, it's all fixed again.
I had a similar thing. I don't use the GoPros. I'm using an Acasso camera because they're cheaper. And I bought a microphone to go in it. One of these, are they called dead cats? Fluffy things like that to stop the wind. And plugged that in. And it actually made the audio worse because the little attachment I found to my cost was rubbing on my harness.
Scratching.
So when I actually took the microphone and just used the unit itself, the audio was much better. But it took me about 3 videos to work that one out.
I've done a film once and you have to cut a lot of it out. And it's not until, you know, you look at the film, it's crazy. You stand on the river up the road here. And on this particular day, I had to be close to one of the other guys who was fishing because he wasn't very well. And I thought, well, if I can't see him and he collapses and then ends up washed down the river, I'm going to feel guilty. So I set myself underneath this bridge. And the only way I could get the microphones was to run cables underwater.
Really?
Yeah, underwater, right, with very expensive equipment, right, on tripods. And then the microphones are on tripods as well. They weren't on bank stitch because it was hard gravel. I've got a flow of water coming up behind me. You've got landing net handles in your hand, which you can knock all this equipment around. Yeah. And then to link everything up, I've got power banks hanging down like 2 or 3 inches off the water, right? Not even in plastic bags, and then cables under the water running to each other. And when I tell people, and they're going, oh, I'm under the bridge, worrying about that. I've got an ancient fishing rod, which is irreplaceable. You cannot replace it. And the prices have gone through the roof. And I've gone like that to strike a fish, forgetting I was underneath a bridge. And nearly took the top of the rod off.
Yeah. It's now a 10-foot rod rather than
and
12.
You're more worried about the filming. Luckily, you know, with editing, you can cut those things out. Nobody ever gets to see them.
That's brilliant. Well, look, pal, I really appreciate your time. We've been nattering half an hour, so we may have to come back and have another little chat sometime. That's all right. Give us an update on your YouTube and your captures moving forward. But yeah, it's been great. It's been great catching up, and well, no doubt we'll see each other on the bank. I know we popped out and had a bit of lure fishing. We've both been a bit grotty, haven't we? Health-wise.
We
had an hour or two.
He's got a plastic heart, and I've got a plastic heart.
Yeah, we're plastic. We need carbon fibre, don't we?
No.
So board on or something like that.
Fiberglass.
Fiberglass. Cool. But yeah, we'll get out again. We'll have another one of these again as well, if that's all right. But I really appreciate you coming on. It's the first one. It's something quite new. I've got microphones and goodness knows whatever else here. So I know we had a little test run, and we've got Mitzi on as well, which is brilliant. Yeah. Okay, pal. Thanks very much. Thanks for taking part, and I'll see you on the bank very soon.
You're very welcome, and goodbye. And
thanks.
Bye. See you
later. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
See you later. Bye. Cheers. Bye.